Hey everybody, this week we have an episode I've been waiting to do for a long time. We have Jesse Thorne, arguably the greatest podcaster out there. He was kind enough to invite me over to Maximum Fun Studios here in LA, and we spoke about his favorite album, which is the album from Whoopi Goldberg's one-woman show on Broadway. First of all, it's an album that I'm sad I've never heard before. I definitely recommend that you take a listen because it's not strictly comedy and it's really just it'll affect you for sure. I mean, it's definitely comedy. There's a lot of comedy to it, but it's going to affect you deeper than that if you're a human. So thank you to Jesse Thorne for inviting me over and for recommending this album. And yeah, please check this out. Obviously, go to MaximumFun.org, follow him at Jesse Thorne on Twitter, subscribe to Jordan Jesse Go, all their podcasts, including the web series Put This On, which is amazing. So yeah, enjoy this episode, and please don't forget to subscribe to us if you haven't already, and rate us highly on iTunes. Thanks so much.
Fucking day. Around the world in 18 motherfucking days. Da do be do be do be do be do do wa Around the world. What's happening? What's happening? Look, y'all, I say what's happening. Y'all say everything's everything, whatever the fuck you say. You know? So, like, we're gonna try this shit again. Around the world in 18 motherfucking days. Da do be do ch 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 da do be do ch 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 ch.
I think miking even closer.
I'm gonna need to, huh? I'm not used to adjusting all this stuff, like I said. Radio Shack. There we go. That feels so sexual. But that's good. It's nice. It comfortably
gets
sexual.
Gets up in your business.
It's good. Do you want to look at this? Is it going to help you?
Yeah.
It's not going to help you. That's fine. All right. You tell me when you're ready.
Yeah, I'm ready.
I'm ready to
We're
go.
Rolling.
This is way too comfortable. This is very nice. All right. Hey, everybody. This week on Comedy on Vinyl, obviously, this is Jason Klom. And with me is Jesse Thorne.
Hi, Jason. How are you?
Hi, Jesse. How are you?
Oh, I'm great.
So you wanted to talk about Whoopi Goldberg's Broadway show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I picked it because it is... when I really thought about it, it is probably the comedy album that I've heard the most and had the most impact on me.
Yeah.
Well, as strange as that may sound to people who think of Whoopi Goldberg as the lady from Juana Man.
Yeah.
Was that the one she was in?
I don't know.
I might be wrong.
You could be.
There was like a basketball movie with Eddie Griffin that she was in.
All I can think of is Jumpin' Jack Flash, and that's not going to help me.
Yeah.
Or you.
That one's not that embarrassing.
I love that
movie.
It's
a fun movie, yeah.
Yeah. So when did you first hear it?
My mom had a record player and a stereo, but did not have a lot of records.
Okay.
I think she moved to the Bay Area where I grew up, from Washington, D.C. when I was, right before I was born. So in 78 or 79 or something like that. I was born in 81. And, at some point in the 70s, this is like family folklore, she lost a huge record collection in a flood and announced that she would never buy another record again. Like we're talking like 1,000 or 1,500 jazz records.
Oh, Jesus.
And so I grew up in this sort of odd type of family, which was a family for whom music was really centrally important, who had no records.
Oh, my God.
Like, my mom had some tapes. I remember, like, an Ella Fitzgerald tape. She had one or two Miles Davis albums on LP.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was pretty much it. And so we would go to the library and check out records.
Okay.
And I remember checking out this record repeatedly.
Yeah.
From the Mission Library in San Francisco or the main library. I think the main library had the record collection.
Okay.
And I probably checked this record out 10 times. And eventually, I had an aunt who is not really an aunt, but my mom's best friend who lived in Washington, D.C., still lives in Washington, D.C., and she taped it for me. She put it on a tape for me. And I used to listen to the tape over and over and over.
What attracted you to it first?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's funny. It's a great album.
Yeah.
But I think it was just I knew who Whoopi Goldberg was.
Sure.
In San Francisco, still, Whoopi Goldberg, it rules the school.
Yeah.
Because she really made her name in San Francisco.
Right.
And so she is like, she and Tracy Chapman. Mm-hmm. There's a really limited number of San Francisco celebrities, you know?
Uh-huh.
Willie McGee, right. Former Giants outfielder. Uh-huh. Willie McGee is from San Francisco.
Huey Lewis.
Yeah, Huey Lewis. Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, Huey Lewis sings, Huey Lewis and the News sing the national anthem on opening day for the Giants every year.
That is awesome.
And have since I was a kid. People in San Francisco still have no, including me, no embarrassment about loving Huey Lewis. And so she was like that, but a movie star. And, you know, she actually, one of the times that I came closest to celebrity or show business in my childhood, a very impactful time, was they filmed Sister Act, like 4 or 5 blocks from my house.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And that's actually awesome. they like I lived sort of in between, by then I lived sort of in between a sort of rougher neighborhood and a sort of nicer neighborhood, the Mission and Noe Valley. And they actually filmed it in the nicer neighborhood. They filmed it in Noe Valley and they added all this graffiti to everything to make it look lousy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was really funny. But anyway, she was just, I don't know what it was about the record itself, but there are parts of it that I still have memorized from when I was 9 or 10.
Right. Does it, I would imagine now it might resonate more dramatically, or does it does it not? I mean, I don't know. I mean, because it's clearly, I can imagine if I'd listened to it as a kid, there's some shit that's definitely just humorous, but it's really deep and I kind of almost cried listening to it. So
yeah, it's, I mean, I think the fact, I think when something has a story to it, I mean, I grew up at the sort of very beginning, I think, of the era of book on tape being a normal thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the records that we would check out of the library when I was a kid were like kids' story records.
Sure.
And I think that the narrative part of this album, which is totally, I mean, it's a series of vignettes, but they're narrative vignettes. It's a real one-person show and not just a stand-up record.
Mm-hmm.
I think that contributed to my appreciation of it. Although, you know, there's plenty of things that I couldn't have followed at the time. I mean, there's a lot of sort of vulgarity that didn't mean anything to me.
Right, right. And coat hanger probably didn't mean anything
to you. I mean, I remember realizing as a, 14-year-old or something like that, that means back alley abortion.
Yeah, right.
Like, oh, wow. That's heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know even if I knew who Anne Frank was. Mm-hmm. There's an extended sequence that takes place in the Anne Frank house.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure I knew who Anne Frank was at the time. I mean, I picked it up from context from listening to the record.
Yeah, yeah. Was it, then do you know what it was that appealed to you then as a young kid? Was it just the funny bits, or was there something about the way she was reading it? Anything specific? I mean,
she had this character on there called, if I'm remembering correctly, and I haven't listened to this album in 15 years, but Fontaine, the sort of jive talking wino.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really liked that jive talking wino because I think I grew up at the very end of the jive talking wino era. Being born in 1981, like the sort of the shaky junkies and winos, and you know, they both have a sort of weird, you know, heroin junkies and winos both have a sort of weird, sort of flowy, almost shaky way of walking around. That was still going on in my neighborhood when I was growing up. Like, it was the people from that had been, you know, 18 in 1976 and in 1986,
yeah.
they were busted up.
Mm-hmm.
They were falling apart, you
right.
know. And yeah, I mean, I just recognized it from, you know, people around the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I always want, because I when I listen to people talk about the stuff that they love the most or the stuff that they listen to first, I'm always curious, did your parents, obviously you already sort of established that records were not a constant in your house because your mother was damaged by that. That would kill me. Was there any other comedy that you were introduced to? Like,
yeah, well, my mom, my dad loved Cheers,
mm-hmm.
And we used to watch Cheers. My parents were divorced from before I can remember.
Yeah.
And me and my dad used to watch Cheers together on his TV, and it's weird. Like, I think of this just as I'm sort of the last generation of people to remember Jive Talking Winos.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm also the last generation of people to remember changing the channel on your TV with
yep,
a wrench.
That's true. Yeah.
So, like, my dad had a TV. I remember this in small part because of what a big deal it was when we got a larger black and white television.
Uh-huh.
But my dad had maybe a 10, 12 inch black and white TV in our house with broken off knobs that you had to change with a wrench. And we watched Cheers every night and often MASH too.
Uh-huh.
But Cheers was my dad's absolute favorite thing.
Yeah.
I'm talking about when I'm 7, 8 years old.
Sure.
When it first went into syndication.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom introduced me to Pee Wee Herman.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
She made me go see Pee Wee's Big Adventure. I did not want to go see it. I mean, to be fair, I was 6.
Yeah.
But I did not want to go see it. I thought it seemed weird.
Yeah.
And I loved it right away.
Right.
I mean, right from the scene,
mm-hmm.
you know, right from the bunny slippers sniffing the carrot, I was on board. There was no doubt about what my relationship with Pee Wee from there on would be.
Yeah.
But, you know, I watched Pee Wee's Playhouse with my mom every Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
My parents split time 50-50, except that I always spent Friday nights with my mom. And every Saturday morning, I would watch Pee Wee's Playhouse with my mom. And my mom loved Monty Python, too.
Awesome.
And my mom has a sort of strange sense of humor. She really loves to laugh and have fun. But she doesn't necessarily understand jokes. What she likes is people behaving in a silly manner.
Okay, yep.
I think her dad, who was sort of estranged from her life to some extent, but the thing that she remembers the most fondly about her dad is that he had a very classic cornball sense of humor, and was a sort of charmer.
Mm-hmm.
And so she has that, plus she's a little bit of a nut, so she likes something like Pee-wee, like... With Pee-wee, the thing that she enjoyed the most was just that it was crazy and wild and out there and fun.
Yeah.
And with Python, you know, Python has these incredibly dense, complicated jokes, you
sure.
know, but they're also being silly.
Yeah, yeah.
In a very smart way.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just what she wanted to see.
I'm really gorgeous, okay? He comes over to me and he looks at me and he goes like, hi. I totally was not ready for, like, heavy conversation, okay? So, like, I say hi, and he says hi, and we say hi, okay? So, like, you know, he says he's having a party, and do I want to go? So I say okay, and he says okay, and we say okay, okay? So, like, you know, I go to the party, right? And, like, he's there, and, like, he says, let's go for a walk. So, like, we go for a walk on the beach. And it's really beautiful because, like, the moon was there, and the stars were there, and the water was there, and the sand was there, and he was there, and I was there, and, like, we did it. Do you know what I'm talking about? Okay. And, like, it was really something, you know. And the only thing I, like, really could not, like, understand was, like, you know, they show you pictures of Spermatozoa, and it always has on, like, a little top hat and flowers and candy, right? And, like, I could not figure out how, like, the top hat, flowers, and candy, like, come out of that little tiny hole, you know. And, like, I asked him, and he said, like, don't worry about it. So, like, I didn't, you know, and it was okay, you know. It was like not earth-shattering, but it was like okay.
Did she? Was there any specific did they care that you were listening to something that was kind of dark and adult?
They were all for it.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome.
I grew up in San Francisco,
sure,
man.
Sure.
I mean, my mom took me to see the Milagro Beanfield War at the Roxy Christ. Theater by my house when I was like 9 or 8 or however old I was when that came
out. Holy shit.
I mean, I don't think my parents, you know, my dad is, you know, my mom grew up in Washington, D.C., and her parents stopped talking to her when she decided to go to college, when she was living in their house.
Interesting.
And so she really earned her cultural values.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't just... like, she was, you know, she earned it. And you know, my dad is a vet. And sort of lived most of his adult life in the vets movement.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if you ever, I one of the things that I remember most about my childhood is going to AA meetings with my dad, my dad got clean and sober, again, before I can remember, but when I was a little kid. And I remember going to AA meetings with him, and sometimes we'd go to vet-specific AA meetings.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes my dad's AA friends would be living at our house and in our small apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just shit's really dark, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just is what it is.
Sure.
There just is what it is. And,
sure.
And when my father married my stepmother, which was when I was, I think 8,
mm-hmm.
something like that. My stepmother is from Belfast,
uh-huh.
and grew up. She's a little younger than my dad, and grew up really at the heart, in the center of the troubles in Belfast.
Yeah,
and I mean, she could not possibly have a darker sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
Like, it would be impossible.
Yeah,
for her
I would
to
imagine.
Have it.
I would imagine. Yeah,
and so, and my dad, who's not much of a joker, but loves to laugh.
Uh huh.
I think that was like the thing that he loved the most about my stepmother mm-hmm. was that here was someone who had the kind of, you know, she is a vet, you mm-hmm. know, in mm-hmm. her own way, you
sure.
know, she's a veteran of this war in Belfast. And so her sense of humor is like the sort of crazy peace movement vets that my dad used to hang out with,
right.
you know, very, very satirical, very biting.
Yeah.
Very. I mean, I've said this before to other on Jordan Jesse Go probably, but like to my stepmother, a really funny joke
mm-hmm.
or a really funny story is the time that a policeman tried to sexually assault her and she kicked him down a flight of stairs. Like that's a really funny story.
Holy shit.
To my stepmother.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I visited her family in Belfast when I was 10. One of the things I remember most vividly is that like everyone was always yelling at each other that they were going to kill them.
Oh my God.
And like in sort of high-spirited type manner, uh-huh. like not like I was at no point concerned that anyone
sure.
was going to kill anyone.
Right.
But that's like baseline.
My
you know
God.
What I mean?
Yeah.
I'll kill ya is baseline.
That's
you
amazing.
You skittery git, you know, is you know, like parents calling their children street prostitutes, you know. That's baseline in the neighborhood my stepmother grew up in.
Holy
so,
shit.
You know, it's sort of that combination of that stuff and you know, but my mom especially loving silliness.
Yeah, that's just as a quick side note. If anybody doesn't know, of course they know, but listen to Jordan Jesse Go because it's a great podcast. But that does sort of illustrate very much what your sense of humor is. If I'm going to go by the podcast, to assume that's you at your least censored. It's very dark underneath a nice, genuine layer of sincerity and fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think that I've always hated that kind of comedy that's like, yeah, we go there. You know what I mean? Because
yeah.
fuck you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like, what even is that? You're just going there just to show that you can go
of
there.
Course,
that's
yeah.
nothing.
Right.
But on the other hand, I have no objection to vulgarity.
Right,
you
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I have no objection to being satirical or any of those things.
For sure.
So I think people who are fans of Jordan Jesse Go, it takes them a while to figure out what's going on a
yeah.
lot of times because...
Yeah.
it seems like we're being very vulgar.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, but these guys seem very happy and nice.
Yeah.
Like, usually people that are vulgar, it's because they're like, yeah, fuck you. You know what I
yeah,
mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, we take it to the max. You know?
Yeah.
And that's not what we're about.
Right.
So what we really like to do is try and alienate all possible audiences.
Of course, of course.
We like to alienate the sort of cringe humor Jim Norton crowd.
Yep.
No disrespect to Jim Norton, very talented guy, obviously, but you know, we try and alienate them by being sweet and having this amazing, beautiful theme song by the Free Design,
yep.
the soft rock legends,
mm-hmm.
and then we try and alienate people who like happy things by just talking about our dicks right off the bat.
Yeah,
just
right
top of the show, boom, boner joke. You know,
is there any philosophy to it, or is it just who you are?
I think it's who we are. I mean it's definitely who I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I and Jordan and I have been friends a long time,
mm-hmm.
so I think it's sort of about where we. And Jordan and I are different in a lot of ways, but it's about where we overlap. Like, I think mm-hmm. we know very well what we share and where we're together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We know the Venn diagram where it overlaps.
Right. And that's what makes it so comforting to listen to, I think. You know, it's I when I first listened to your podcast, yeah, I think I was one of the. I was not alienated, but I was definitely confused as fuck.
Well, one of the big things that happens, and you know, we've had what few sort of nasty reactions we've had to the show mm-hmm. have generally come from people who can't get their head around the tone,
right?
Who are like, wait, and what they usually assume is that we're being snide, and they just don't get it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that we're making fun of them.
Mm-hmm.
Both audience members, you know, the very, very, very rare guests that haven't been on board,
mm-hmm.
I can understand why. I mean, they think that we're Vice Magazine.
Sure.
And we're being arch mm-hmm. and scathing
mm-hmm.
when actually we're just being vulgar and nice.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, I guess people, obviously, they're not inherently going to associate those two, but I feel like it's a necessity to not necessarily separate them.
Yeah.
Did you as a kid, did you make any friends over comedy?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I remember the moment that comedy seemed like a real thing to me as opposed to just something that I enjoyed consuming.
Yeah.
Was I had a friend in middle school named Brendan Getzel.
Mm.
Getzel. And I went to a new school for middle school, and it was a K-8 school. So mm-hmm. the other kids there had been together, but I was joining for sixth grade. And there was like a camping trip at the beginning, like a getting to know you camping trip at the beginning of the year.
One of those. Mm-hmm.
And I remember him telling me different stuff about Letterman.
Uh-huh.
I didn't watch Letterman at the time.
Okay.
But he did. And us talking about deep thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, Brendan Getzel's kind of funny. I'm as funny as Brendan Getzel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it was not a matter of disrespecting Brendan Getzel.
Right.
I thought he was great.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, oh, yeah, like, that's like a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, by this point, I had probably seen, let's be clear, I had probably seen, you know, I had probably seen Pee-wee 100 times. I had probably seen Holy Grail 100 times.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, I had probably seen I loved History of the World Part 1.
Uh-huh.
I'd probably watched that the most of any of them.
Awesome.
I think somehow it only occurred to me that it was like a thing you could do
mm-hmm.
When Brendan was telling me jokes from David Letterman.
<That's>...
You know, and at the time it was like Galooly jokes.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
That's awesome. Did you specifically, do you at all miss having physical media in your hands to listen, or do you not care?
I have a fair number of records.
Uh-huh.
I am not someone who fetishizes records,
sure,
though.
Sure.
Because I have moved several times.
Of course, yeah.
And they're super heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And also because I am a lover of things.
Uh-huh.
And you know, my mom has been for most of my life worked at least part-time in the antiques business. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of grew up going to flea markets and estate sales and garage sure. sales, and my mom's house is full of antiques and beautiful things.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that we were, you know, pretty broke.
Yeah.
And I never want, I have always had this, at least since I became adolescent, had a concern about becoming a collector,
because
I have it in me.
I don't know, like, I did something wrong, and, like, I woke up in the hospital with a doctor patting my hand saying, he managed to save you and the baby, and, like, I really, you know, knew not to, like, really freak out because, like, just, you know, I had to do it again. So, like, I went, you know, really, and I really hope that it's, like, not something you ever have to do, okay, because it's really... I don't know, but, like, I did it, and, like, I, you know, I'm not going to be able to have kids anymore, and it's okay, because, like, I have my whole life in front of me, right, because I really like to party, you know, and I have a really good time on the beach, and I have a lot of friends, you know, and I love to have a good time, and, like, you can't drag babies around, you know, you really can't, and besides, you know, I'm turning 14 next week, I have my whole life in front of me, you know, like, if you ever, like, want to surf on the beach or something, like, call me up, okay? Okay?
I mean, when I was a little kid, I collected everything.
Yeah.
Rocks, shells, baseball cards,
uh-huh.
comic books,
mm-hmm.
Garbage Pail Kids.
Awesome.
Mussels, millions of
yeah.
unusual small creatures lurking everywhere. like the list of things that I collected when I was seven
uh-huh.
is too long for, we would use up our whole hour just me listing those things.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to be Questlove and have to buy a house to put my records in.
Yeah.
Especially because I would never expect that I would become financially successful enough to do that. So I've mostly pared my record collection down to things that aren't on CD.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the hard part.
That I listen to.
Mm-hmm.
That I actually actively listen to.
Right, right.
And so things that are, I mean, the one thing about that makes me uncomfortable is that when it's digital, it's so much more ephemeral. It can just disappear. I mean, there's all
exactly.
there's all these things that, you know, I was just thinking about this is music related, but these D'Angelo bootlegs that I had
uh-huh.
when he was on the Voodoo tour in 2001, which is this, speaking of Questlove was on that tour, along with just the most amazing R&B band you could ever put together.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife and I went to that show. It was like one of a special thing for us. And
uh-huh.
I had some bootlegs from that tour that are just gone because they were MP3s, you know?
Right.
I don't know. I guess one of my hard drives failed or something.
Sure.
And I was just like, man, I wish I had those.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, and I miss the world in which you could just get anything. There was this thing called Audio Galaxy. I don't know if you ever used
uh-uh.
Audio Galaxy. This is in the sort of Napster, immediately post-Napster
okay.
era when I was in college. And what was great about this was one of these peer-to-peer file sharing systems.
Mm-hmm.
But what was great about it is you could search on their website for anything,
mm-hmm.
and then you could sort of bookmark it. And then when somebody logged into the system that had that, you
uh-huh.
could get it, as
oh.
opposed to like on Napster, you had to search for whatever
right.
you were connected to.
Uh-huh.
And it meant that you could get anything.
That's awesome.
It meant that you could digitally get anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I miss that feeling of you can get anything.
For
because,
sure.
you know, in a world where 75% of, you know, in-print music is on iTunes
yeah.
and 60% is on Amazon MP3
mm-hmm.
and... blah, 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 blah. I do miss that part
yeah.
of the digital experience.
What about the art of some albums, not all albums? I mean, besides the fact that it's 12 inches by 12 inches, but there is, we covered this one Monty Python album, Matching Tie and Handkerchief. I don't know if you've ever heard the album, but...
I probably have. I had a bunch of Python albums on tape.
Oh, okay. Side two of the record is two grooves inside one another. So if you played it, you wouldn't know which side you were going to get, and sometimes you would play it for somebody and be surprised this is not the fucking album I counted on. I don't see any kind of any innovation because we don't have the physical media to sort of do that. I mean, do you think? I don't know what I'm saying. I'm just pointing that out. But
I know the kind of thing that you're talking about. I think that stuff is neat.
Sure.
However, I don't necessarily think that it outweighs how heavy it is when you have to go somewhere.
For sure. Yeah.
Or that you might just one day accidentally run your needle across it and ruin it.
Yeah.
And so I think that the reason that digital media has become emerged relatively triumphant is because it is better.
Yeah.
There are advantages to both, certainly.
Sure.
And I think we can fetishize the advantages that are inherent to whatever format, you know, LP or cassettes. People with these cassette-based record labels now.
Yeah.
But I think that the truth is that, you know, the content is what we want.
Sure.
And the magic of the fact that, you know, on my phone, not even on an MP3 player,
sure,
but on my phone, I've got 15 albums right now.
Right.
That I can just listen to at any time.
Yeah.
And I can just get them without even having to go to a store.
Mm-hmm.
Like the other day, I was thinking about, you know who I kind of like? Steve Reich.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know anything about contemporary classical music, but I had just heard some Steve Reich pieces and thought, these are beautiful. I kind of like these.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, well, maybe I should try listening to some Steve Reich.
Mm-hmm.
So I downloaded some Steve Reich and I had it right away and listened to it. And I was like, yeah, I do like Steve Reich.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think is definitely better.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's the same, you know, with CDs versus LPs.
Sure.
Like I liked about LPs that you could buy them for a dollar at the thrift store.
Yep.
I liked about LPs that there was stuff you could get on LP that you couldn't get in another format.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Yeah.
But if you gave me the choice between a CD and an LP,
mm-hmm,
I'd pick a CD
because
it's smaller.
Yeah.
And lighter.
Mm-hmm. It's much more practical.
And it's harder to mess up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Did you go, just out of curiosity then, I mean, I guess we could talk about how, did you and Jordan become friends over comedy or was it just out of?
I was actually Jordan's RA.
Okay.
I was the RA of a performing arts college at UC Santa Cruz,
mm-hmm,
or performing arts hall at a residential college at UC Santa Cruz.
Uh-huh.
And he was one of my residents. And, I remember being annoyed that he was funnier than me.
Hmm. I can relate.
And so I was like, well, I should just become friends with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the same feeling that I had about, Gene, who originally co-hosted The Sound of Young America with me and Jordan, and has been a regular guest on Jordan Jesse Go, is still a friend of ours. That I was like, man, this guy is the funniest guy. This guy is so funny.
Mm-hmm.
And, that just was really important to me.
Yeah.
It was the most important to me in meeting someone and whether I wanted to be friends with them.
Right.
How funny they were.
Yeah.
And I later found out that Gene and I, our freshman year, had this class called core class together, which is this class that everyone in the residential college has to take.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that he thought I was drunk or high the whole time that we were in core class together.
That's funny.
And then when he found out that I was straight edge, it like blew his mind.
Yeah.
Like he could not believe it. And I just thought Gene was funny. That's what I thought about Gene.
Right.
So.
Have you ever shared this album with anybody or is it just you? Just a you thing?
Oh, man. I think it might just be a you thing. I mean, I certainly listened with my mom as a kid. I might have given it to my brother when he was a kid. I have two half brothers who are one is 8 years younger than me. One's 14 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
He's still in high school, actually. And I think that there was. I gave the tape of this that I had to my brother.
Okay.
But you know what I mostly associate it with is playing it on, I mean, I remember the, I remember the sort of sleeve that it came in, not the cardboard sleeve, but the plastic, the sort of yellowing plastic sleeve that it came in from the library. And then I remember listening to it on tape. I just had a tape, and it just said Whoopi on it. You know, it was a home recording tape. And my mom had a tape deck that was, it was one of the first portable recording tape decks. I actually used it to do some of my first radio projects when I was in college. And if you imagine the size of a CD player that you would put in a home stereo system, it was that size. Only heavier because it was full of batteries and stuff, you know, and it had a shoulder strap.
Holy shit.
But anyway, that was our home tape deck. And so I remember, and it loaded from the top. It had a flip-up cassette loader. So I remember putting the tape in, slamming it down, and the it just had a little cover. So you would put the tape directly into the machine and then slip down the cover. And I remember the feeling of pressing the little eject button, and it went ka-chunk, and the tape would sort of pop up out of the machine. So those are the things that I associated with it, and I think those are by-yourself things.
Uncomfortable? You are, aren't you? Are you afraid that I might come over there and rub up against you? A lot of people are afraid of that. They see someone with a stiff leg and a bad hip and their body's a little crumbled up and they're afraid you're going to come and touch them. And I always try to explain to them that they're not going to wake up like this tomorrow. I generally tell them it takes 2 weeks after I've touched them. And that seems to cool them right out.
Do you have a favorite track? I mean, there's only four. Do you have a favorite moment on the album, I guess?
Well, I mean, Fontaine was definitely my favorite. And I definitely loved... I mean, I remember singing as a kid. Around, and mind you, I have not listened to this album in more than 15 years. Around the world in 80 motherfucking days. Da doobie doo, da doobie doo, da doobie 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 doo doo.
Dead on, 100% dead on. God, that must have. Yeah, that killed me. So as a little kid.
Yeah. And I remember the, and I also remember the surfer girl going, yeah, it was totally PG. Like Mary was with Jesus, only I know who the father is.
So obviously to a kid, that's none of it's controversial. But it, God, I just, it does like the...
You know that expression, you remember when Nancy Pelosi first became Speaker of the House and the Republicans were talking about San Francisco values?
Yes.
I have San Francisco values.
Yeah.
I think that Whoopi Goldberg, for me, is like dead center, like, and has always been, you know, like Whoopi Goldberg, Danny Glover. Like these are, Danny Glover, also a San Francisco celebrity, once helped my dad change his tire.
Awesome.
But like these are, no, gave him a jump start, gave my dad a jump start. And these are like middle of the road, you know, meat and potatoes perspectives on the world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I don't think to my family that it was anything other than that, you know,
right.
I mean, it might've been, if it had been, you know, like if it had been Robin Williams, another San Francisco legend.
Sure.
You know, I think Robin Williams' sort of mountains of cocaine aesthetic.
Yeah.
Might have made my dad uncomfortable because he was clean and sober.
Yeah.
But, you know, besides that, I mean, it really, it felt like, it still feels sort of like home to me.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is sort of a funny thing to say about it.
It's kind of
not so much the Valley Girl thing. I mean, Valley Girl was just sort of a thing that was going on culturally in 1987 or whenever this came out. But, you know, that was, you know, it was just what was happening. I mean, even like abortion jokes or whatever.
Yeah.
That's just where I'm from, you know?
Right. And I that's awesome, and I think that prepares you beautifully for the world of comedy. Was there a point then, have you ever been shocked by comedy? Like that's what I guess that's what makes me think that. That would have shocked me.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like, I think that there are people who don't, and I think you can see it in the recent controversies over rape jokes.
Yeah.
And also over Chris Rock's joke that he did on Twitter. Did you see that joke? I'm no Chris Rock, but it was something like, it was on the 4th of July this year, and it was Happy White People's Independence Day. I'm sure the slaves enjoyed the fireworks.
Holy shit. That's amazing.
And that was super controversial.
Uh-huh.
And what it shows is that I think if you're not in the comedy world,
mm-hmm.
you're obviously tougher to shock.
Sure.
If you're in the comedy world. But you're also, if you're not in the comedy world, you're less able to parse jokes.
Sure.
And understand what their meaning is.
Right.
And I think that people sometimes think that people who aren't in comedy mm-hmm. or who aren't appreciators of comedy don't necessarily look at a joke and try and figure out what its meaning is.
Sure.
They just look at the literal subject matter and say, is this appropriate or is this not appropriate?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you just don't say these things.
Yeah.
These, you don't say rape, you don't say mm-hmm. murder, you know, you don't talk about race, whatever it is.
Sure, sure.
And so I think that if I am shocked, it tends to be by the content of a joke, mm-hmm. what a joke means rather than the subject matter.
Okay, sure.
Louis C.K. had that famous joke that was, you can tell how good of a person you are by how long it took you after September 11th to masturbate.
Yeah, yes.
And for him, it was between building one and two.
Right, right.
And I mean, you can look at that joke and think, and you can say it's not appropriate to joke about September 11th.
Sure.
Or you can say it's not, so many people died. How can you make a joke about that? But what that joke is about Louis C.K. thinking he is pathetic.
Yeah, right.
And that's the content of that joke.
Sure.
I think I have been shocked. I'll tell you one time when I remember being shocked.
Mm-hmm.
We had a friend competing in the San Jose comedy competition, the far lesser cousin to the San Francisco International uh-huh. comedy competition. He had a show at the San Jose, I think it's an improv, which is like this converted movie theater. And what they do in these things is they have a bunch of comics do 5-minute sets and then they have everybody vote. And then while people are voting, they bring in a guest headliner.
Okay. Okay.
And this guest headliner, his angle was he was the comedy prison guard.
All right.
And he was sort of a fat white guy. And he did a bunch of like prison rape jokes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked by that.
Yeah.
Because to me, I can't imagine anything less funny than a prison guard joking about prison rape.
Right. Right.
Because the prison guard is the person who's in charge, who's supposed to be preventing rape.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
And that actually shocked me and upset me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas, I'm sure that I have laughed at many, many rape jokes in my time.
Sure.
But the question is, the question is the content of the thing.
Of course.
And I'm usually... I'm usually the kind of guy who'll just walk away rather than, in a comedy context, I'll usually just walk away rather than being angered.
Right, right.
But, sometimes something will get me. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, San Francisco values. I am pretty PC
for
a guy that's, willing to laugh at September 11th jokes readily.
Mm-hmm. It's trite for me to just say it's all about context, but I mean, do you think there's anything important? I don't want to get too deep into it, but is it important at all for comedians to take a step back and realize that it's hard for people to understand that? Or should they keep taking the position that they keep taking, which is, sorry, fuck you, this is what I do, you don't understand it, please walk away and don't listen?
Well, I think the reason that comedians take that position is because they realize that it's all about context.
Sure.
And ultimately, they're not they're not in control of their, they fight for their whole careers to try and be as much in control of their context as possible.
For sure.
And, but they're just not, you know, you just get hired to play a weird corporate gig, you know?
Right.
Jordan and I, like 2 months ago, did a show by the invitation of a, we'll just say a major entertainment corporation.
Yeah.
Did a show at Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
And, they invited us to do this show. I took the day off work, took the train down. Mm-hmm. Jordan was going down to work later in the weekend on something else. And we're like, okay, you know, like it's going to be a little weird. It's an outdoor stage. We don't know how many people we're going to draw in this weird outdoor stage in the middle of the day on the first day of Comic-Con, but we'll just do it because it'll be a fun thing and the people are nice. And the people were nice, but it just so happened that the marketing boss of this major entertainment corporation happened to be walking past. She didn't like the tone of our humor.
Mm-hmm.
They cut our microphones and she yelled at us off stage. We had never met this woman before in our life. We weren't getting paid.
Yeah.
You know, no one had said like do a clean set, you know, avoid controversial topics.
Right.
We weren't doing a particularly vulgar set.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a little vulgar, but we're capable of much more vulgar. Trust me.
Yeah.
And you know, we hadn't said anything like controversial. Like we hadn't said, you know, like, Hitler wasn't so bad or anything like that. And although, you know, we do think Hitler wasn't that bad.
Of course.
I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, he had some...
He had some ideas, man.
Without Hitler, would we have the guy from the band Sparks who has that Hitler mustache? That one of the brothers from the band Sparks. But, like, you don't have control over your context. And so if you're a club comic who makes his living that way, all you can do is just say, well, I'm going to do my thing. And I hope it works.
Sure.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just hope that whoever put me in this place knows what it is that I do.
This is my long, luxurious blonde hair. Ain't it pretty? I could turn it into a ponytail. Want to see? No. You do for real?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, look, it's in my eyes now. My mother made me go to my room because she said this wasn't nothing but a shirt on my head. And I said, nah, this is my long, luxurious blonde hair. And she said, nah, fool, that's a shirt. And I said, you a fool. And she made me go to my room. But I don't care because when I get big, I'm going to get 50 million, trillion, million, million elephants and I'm going to let them go in the house so they can trample on everybody and kill them. And I am. And she's going to want me to make them stop, but she ain't even going to know I'm there because I'm going to have blonde hair, blue eyes, and I'm going to be white.
If you were going to tell somebody, we always sort of end it with, you know, tell somebody why to listen to the album that you love so much.
Yeah.
Why would you, to somebody who's never heard this before, maybe only knows her from the movies, why would you say, listen to this album?
Well, I think Whoopi Goldberg was great in her great popular movies.
Sure.
But I think she has a bad reputation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she is like, she's like Robin Williams, except that she never got to do old sad guy movies.
Right.
You know, rehabilitate to some extent.
Yeah.
And I think that there are a lot of people of my generation and younger especially who are sort of hipsterish and it wouldn't occur to them that Whoopi Goldberg became famous sort of by the strength of her genius.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like she was such a brilliant, amazing performer that she became the star of comedy movies despite being a black woman.
Right.
There's still no stars of comedy movies. There have been none since that are black women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Monique is the closest we can say.
Yeah, yep.
And she was, you know, there are things about this this album that are sort of Broadway circa 1982.
Sure.
Can we figure out what year this came out?
I think 85.
85, okay. Uh-huh. So some of them are sort of 1985-y. Like there's a little bit of hokiness to this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you hear it, you will hear, oh, right. So the reason Whoopi Goldberg became famous is because she's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, sort of like, you know, you just get, oh, right. So it wasn't she wasn't always the person who was having to be in movies that she didn't want to be in because she has to make a paycheck and try and keep her name out there.
Right.
Or the woman who, I don't know, I think she's cool on The View, but, you know, you know, smoking a J backstage at The View or whatever.
Right.
But she actually was and is, a brilliant lady, someone with a real social conscience, which is something that you don't always see in comedy,
sure.
and a real humanistic social conscience, which I think is a special thing, a special kind of San Francisco-y thing that I'm very proud to come from San Francisco. You know, like my friend W. Kamau Bell, who has a show right now on FX, he's from Chicago, but I think he developed his art in San Francisco and chose to live in San Francisco because, you know, even if you're doing racial humor, it can be universal and humane.
Sure.
In a place that wants that.
Right.
You
right.
know, even if some of the people want it because they're, you know, piece, it was too PC or whatever, you know,
mm-hmm.
It still means something.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of a cool thing about Whoopi Goldberg. Like, yeah. I still think Whoopi Goldberg is cool because of this record.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, like, to me, she's still a down-ass chick, you know?
It for me, personally, it served as a reminder of all that. I mean, this whole thing, thematically, the whole album is about empathy. Like, I've never felt this way from a comedy. It's hard to call it a comedy album strictly, but I've never felt that way after listening to a comedy album, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that is, I mean, you talk about San Francisco values. Like, I think that when, you know, I understand people feeling like they're assaulted by political correctness and blah, blah,
sure.
blah, blah, blah. You know,
yeah.
I can see where people are coming from. I disagree, but I can see where it,
yeah.
where it's what from of what it is born.
Yeah.
But I think that the themes of this record are about connecting with other people.
Yeah.
And as you said, empathy, seeing things through other people's eyes, which is a really... really wonderful thing. And if I think of things that have made me feel that way before, actually, you know, I'm not a big fan of seeing one person theater in general.
Sure.
Especially, you know, in the kind of LA casting director attention attracting attempt sense.
Yeah.
But I think of like Danny Hawk, who's a stage yeah. performer, and his piece, Jails, Hospitals, and Hip Hop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things, or Anna Deavere Smith, like one of the things that solo theater can do because of that, because of the extra couple of steps of suspension of disbelief,
yeah.
the extra couple of steps of acceptance of metaphor that you're willing to do in theater and especially solo theater, if you see one performer transcend boundaries,
yeah.
That can mean a lot for, you know, as an artistic statement about transcending boundaries.
Sure.
And that's a really cool thing. But ultimately, for me, like if you listen to this,
mm-hmm.
you just think, I would just like you to think, you know what? Whoopi Goldberg seems cool and talented. She seems like a cool lady.
Yeah. Because
yeah. that's what I think about. Like when I think of Whoopi Goldberg, I think, you know, Whoopi Goldberg really seems like a cool lady.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Going out with Ted Danson and everything. Like what a great thing.
Right?
You know what I mean? Like she just seems like a cool, fun lady. She reminds me of my mom and my aunts and like people that I thought were cool.
Yeah.
When I was a kid.
I would love to hear her on one of your shows.
I would love to have Whoopi Goldberg on.
To have you interview her? That would
be
amazing.
God, who was it? Oh, Auntie Ballas. Two of the guys from Auntie Ballas, the Afrobeat band from Brooklyn, were on my show. And they showed me, they had been on, they had met Whoopi Goldberg somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And they had an awesome picture of Whoopi Goldberg. This is like 4 days before I recorded this interview with them. They had this picture of Whoopi Goldberg puffing a J and holding up their album cover.
Oh, my God.
It was like the
Holy
coolest
shit.
Thing ever. Like, I was like, man, Whoopi Goldberg's a cool lady.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Why don't you plug everything that you can plug?
Yeah. Well, I mean, my comedy podcasts and stuff. I do Jordan Jesse Go, which is a sort of silly, vulgar comedy podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Almost completely contentless. Occasional bouts of feelings, but
sure,
we try
sure.
and keep them not too frequent. And I also host a public radio show called Bullseye
mm-hmm.
That is a sort of arts and culture recommendation show.
Mm-hmm.
And it is based in in-depth interviews with creative people. And I would love to get Whoopi on there sometime. But yeah, you can hear it on some local public radio stations, New York, Philadelphia, San Francisco, Detroit. And you can also get it along with my other podcast productions at MaximumFun.org.
Awesome. Awesome. And on Twitter, where are you again?
At Jesse Thorne, J-E-S-S-E-T-H-O-R-N.
Awesome. This has been so much fun.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
I really appreciate it. And just as a reminder, everybody, follow us on iTunes and all that good stuff. And
follow us on iTunes. That's not even something you can do.
That's yes. And subscribe to us on Twitter. And download us on Twitter. That's what I need you to do. I'm a little nervous.
Everybody out there, hear us at your cars.
Yes.
From the boxes.
God damn.
Thank you.
And as you always, have a good thing.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Visit StolenDress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, rate us highly, and write your reviews. You can follow us on Facebook.com/ComedyOnVinyl and Twitter at Comedy on Vinyl.
Hear us at your cars from the boxes. Thank you.
But there is just one mystery that always puzzles me. Who ate Napoleon with Josephine when Bonaparte was away? Who said, do this for me, and I'll do that for you, while never fighting Prussians, Austrians, and Russians? I told you once when Rip Van Winkle to the mountains went, his missus...